Let's waste no time and head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in Joe Patrick, fresh off of a rare night session for the Atlanta Falcons, this time at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Joe, how we doing? You get enough sleep last night?
Oh, yeah. No, last night was great. You know, it was great to just kind of be out there in front of the fans again. Obviously, they did the thing at Secondary High School a week ago or so, but just always really nice for there to be that kind of festive atmosphere that you expect at training camp that you normally get at Flowery Branch, but for obvious reasons that we've talked about, they weren't able to do that this year. So just like really special to be able to, like, from my perspective, you know, I'm at these practices where it's quote unquote silent practices, as some of the players have called them. And then to like come out and see the fans respond to them and the players responding to the fans, especially afterwards, it just makes me feel good to kind of see that interaction taking place. So it was a really good night overall.
Okay, so I need your help because, as I explained in the first segment of the show, Joe, I couldn't see a damn thing yesterday because although the Maybach Suite was incredible and the food and the $20 challenge, which was amazing, all the linemen were standing right in front of where we were sitting, so I was relying on the big board to watch the plays and trying to do the radio show at the same time. So give us a nice chunky rundown of what happened last night.
Yeah, Chris, you know, it's funny because I was joking with some media members saying that it was nice to actually watch a practice from the press box because not only do you get the view and everything, but you can't get blocked by the players, which they tend to do sometimes at Flowery Branch, you know, when we're standing there on the field and the linemen will get in the way. So I feel your pain there. But overall, I think it was about as entertaining of a practice as you could wish to see, especially kind of in that venue where you've got a lot of fans there, because what they were doing, they did a pretty short individual session and group session. And then they were in basically 11-on-11 scrimmage for what seemed to be a solid like hour and a half, I would say, last night. It was impressive just how long the practice just kept going. They kept on letting these guys run out there. And you got to see, you know, the one offense versus the two defense, then the one defense versus the two offense, and then the one offense versus the one defense. So I think you got a little bit of everything where you got to see some of the reserve guys, you know, the rookies and those types, take on, you know, some higher level competition on the other side. And then you got to see, you know, what both sides kind of have with the starting units going up against each other. And, you know, I think it's one of those deals with Kirk Cousins when he comes into this team. He's like, there's no doubt about that he's giving the defense a lot better looks, I think, preparing them. And I think the defense just preparing for a Zach Robinson offense that really gets them ready to go, I think, better than just about anybody else. And again, when you go down to joint practices next week in Miami, you get to go against Mike McDaniel and see a lot of that similar kind of very modern, fast, you know, style of offense that seems to be dominant around the league so far. So a really productive night, I think, last night.
Yeah, and we know Tyreek Hill will be fired up because he just got his bag. We'll get more into that coming up in the next segment. But, Joe, talk to me about the cornerback battle because it seems like it's Mike Hughes' job to lose for now, but I think Clark has held up his own as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and something that I said, and I know we've talked about it, Chris, but heading into this training camp, I always thought that Clark Phillips is the kind of player where, you know, just by first glance, like literally visually, you just see how small he is, and it might get a coach kind of make them hesitant to, you know, lock him in as a starting cornerback in the NFL. But he's also the kind of player who's going to make plays over the course of training camp. And he's, you know, that's kind of his specialty when he was at Utah. Such a playmaker, such an ability to, you know, sit in those zone coverages with his eyes on the quarterback and be able to jump routes and just use his natural instincts that have made it so that his size wasn't as big of a disadvantage for him in college. And now it's like, can those instincts actually translate? And the athleticism obviously translate to the NFL level. And I think that we're starting to see him put together some of those plays. He's had a couple of interceptions last week in camp. He had the first one at Secondary High School, then another one a couple of weeks later or a couple of days later. So, you know, I do think that he is climbing. And it's a little bit more difficult to really see, like, you know, Mike Hughes hasn't made those plays. But at the same time, I can't, like, say that Mike Hughes has been poor. You know, like, he doesn't, like, stand out as some, like, oh, man, that's a sore spot in this defense right now. So, you know, I think it's going to be a tough battle. And I think that, you know, some of these preseason games will probably play into it. Honestly, the joint practices will play into it with how these types of guys are able to fare with all the motions that Mike McDaniel uses with those fast receivers in Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So the competition will continue. And I think that Clark Phillips is kind of putting up as good a fight as I think we all expected him to.
talking with our buddy Joe Patrick here, breaking down the Falcons' open practice at Mercedes-Benz last night, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, when it comes to Miami next week, that offense, Joe, as we've been talking about, I mean, damn, this is going to be a real test for the defense. Do you think you've seen enough from the defensive line, the youngsters? I think our linebacking core is pretty rock solid, and we just talked about the secondary. Have you seen enough that you think they'll be at least able to get in the mix with the Miami offense?
Yeah, I mean, even last year, the reports were that it was, you know, it was competitive. You know, these practices were competitive. It wasn't like the Dolphins were blowing the Falcons out. Although those are just reports. So, yeah, we'll see how things go. But, you know, when you talk about, like, the linebacker group and the defensive back group, it's interesting. And, hell, even the defensive line. I think it's fair to say that they're not, like, the most talented in terms of having star players that are the best at their positions. Well, you do have some of those guys, like a Jesse Bates. But, you know, I think it's fair to say Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata, while very good, are not, like, superstars, those positions. But overall, I feel like you have a lot of depth in these positions. Even the linebacker spot, I think the Falcons have four linebackers that they have a lot of trust in. That includes the rookie J.D. Bertrand, who apparently is a total bookworm and is like picking up everything. And you know, Raheem calls him Captain America, but he really is kind of one of those reliable do everything linebackers that I think will have a solid role in this rotation both this year and then going forward. And I think it's kind of the same in the defensive back group, where there are obviously some questions with how our guys like Richie Grant, DeMarco Helms, you know, they're kind of battling for that safety spot. How will they hold up against this Miami Dolphins style offense? We just talked about the cornerback position. So while you do have some question marks, I think you have some decent depth there when you talk about all the different, you know, nickels that you have with D. Alford, Antonio Hamilton, who was a solid starter last year for the Cardinals, Kevin King, who's, you know, played a lot of minutes for the Packers in the past at the NFL level. So I think you actually have a pretty deep group in all of these rooms on the defensive side of the ball. But can Jimmy Lake make that work in a way that, you know, is able to stand up to some of the most talented guys in the sport? And again, we're going to see if that's the case when they go against Miami and play against some of the most talented guys in the sport, and Tua, Tyreek, and obviously Jalen Waddle.
Who do you think right now has the edge at slot receiver?
I think it's Ray McCloud, and I don't think it's particularly close. I know, you know, I think they have high hopes for Rondale Moore, and I think that as the season goes on, he'll probably play more and more of a role as, you know, guys kind of get hurt or banged up, or they have just, you know, they evolve the offense as time goes on. But it seems like and I say this purely off of the reps that he's taking, he's almost always repping with Michael Penix. When he was throwing, like yesterday, he was basically in on that with that group with the twos. And, you know, the first day of camp when they were running through, doing like a walkthrough of a ton of plays, he was actually on the second field, again, with Penix. So I think that part of that is just trying to get Rondale as many reps as possible when you know, got basically three receivers you're rolling with the ones. But I also think that it tells you that he is kind of behind Ray McCloud for that third spot. Now, I wonder if a guy like Darnell Mooney was to get injured, like how would you then kind of fill that role? Would you use Rondale Moore in that role? Would you kind of shift Drake London or Kyle Pitts to try to fill that void? And then use Rondale Moore, like, you know, slide him in. I'm curious to see how that rotation will evolve over the course of the season. But I would say right now it's Ray McCloud's job. And, you know, he's an interesting player because we haven't really seen him showcased as a wide receiver really in his career. But he does come directly from Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, as several of these players on this offense do. You talk about a couple tight ends as well. And so he has kind of a diverse background in the system and kind of knowing the scheme. And I think that hopefully this is his opportunity to take advantage of that. And I think Zach Robinson has shown a lot of creativity in how to get guys the ball in space, especially these third receivers and the screen game and all that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing how these guys can actually produce this year.
Haven't seen a ton of special teams in practice, Joe, specifically the new kickoff rule. Do you find it odd that we haven't seen more of it? Is it something you think they're doing behind closed doors, or is it just not that important?
I actually do think that it's something that they're doing behind closed doors. I think that they're working on a lot of the special, well, specifically the kickoff return and kickoff coverage. I think they're working on a lot of that when media is not there, probably, you know, like in the evenings or just in the classroom kind of going over it. we have seen them do a little bit of it the first day. And Raheem Morris even said, like, they literally did it on the first day of camp. And Raheem Morris said, you know, this is not typically a day where we would do kickoff. Usually you start with punt and you work your way, and like kickoff's on kind of one of the last things you touch on. But obviously, because of the importance of the play, they wanted to get some of the basics down. So they had, you know, the guys in their, you know, slotted in their alignments on the new alignments for the play and everything. But they weren't really showing off anything. It was mainly just kind of taking reps for how it would typically go down. And I think even when you watch that Hall of Fame game, it was pretty standard stuff. And that might be how some of these go down, but I have to think that all these teams are going to have some sort of wrinkle to throw in there that's creative. And I think it's just really a total game of chess right now between all these special teams coaches and the teams in general of just not wanting to show their hand. Hell, even on the offensive side of the ball, like Zach Robinson said the other day, like, we're not going to show anything in preseason, which is the case. Like, that's been the case. And it just shows how preseason has changed so much, where it used to be the time where you would specifically practice the stuff that you were going to do in games. Now it's like, it's an opportunity to run the clock out without showing anything that you're actually going to do in week one. I think that applies perfectly to this new kickoff rule.
All right, Joe, before I get you out of here, wrapping up with our buddy Joe Patrick, 92.9 Falcons reporter. Let's switch hats here for a second. Alexei Marinchuk, what do you know about him? I know Garth Lagerwey had some very positive comments he made on the station here earlier this week. Is he really going to make that much of a difference for Atlanta United?
They obviously believe in him, and I'm still working on the name too, Marinchuk. I guess the emphasis is on the Ron or in the middle there. We can call him Alexi for the sake of ease. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. He comes from Atalanta, not Atlanta.
Right.
That's an Italian club that won the Europa League last year. And he was a key contributor for them, though he was not a starter. So I think that part of him wanting to make this move is probably getting, you know, a starting role and obviously the salary that comes with that in MLS. But while he wasn't a starter, he was like the most productive substitute player basically in all of European soccer. Just like when you look at his scoring and assist numbers, like the you know, Pro Football Reference, Baseball Reference, there's one for soccer as well. And, you know, he's in like the 99th percentile of like per minute goals, assists, all the expected numbers as well. But that's because he's having the production in these substitute roles where he's not playing the full 90 minutes. So that kind of boosts that up. But he certainly seems like a talented player, a player who can get in the box and make quick decisions while the ball's like on the fly, just like instinctive. But he's not the kind of number 10 that Thiago Almada was. I think he's going to be a little bit like, he won't be on the ball so much. And he's kind of more of a shadow striker and a guy who can come off the wing and just, yeah, try to finish goals, create goals, and just generally add dynamism to this Atlanta United attack that desperately needs it.
All right, their next match coming up. It's an important one. They need to, if I'm remembering correctly, Joe, they can't afford to bring this one to PKs, right, in order to advance?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, they got to win this one in regular time and, you know, for the League Cup, or else they go out. And if they do go out, then it's probably not the worst thing in the world. But I know that obviously this team needs to get any positive momentum it can going. And it's going to be still a hard pass for them. They're not going to have Alexei Marinchuk for this game. They're still sorting. They have to wait and sort out his visa issues. But yeah, they play Santos Laguna, a team in Mexico. They're a beatable team for sure. And especially these Mexican teams are coming off of their off season, so they're not in as much of a rhythm as the MLS clubs. But having said that, Atlanta United hasn't been able to find a rhythm really all season. It seems like every time they take a step forward, they take a step back, if not two. So their last step was a step back. So let's see if they can, you know, take that step forward and put in one of the performances like they did when they surprisingly beat, you know, last year's MLS Cup winners in the Columbus Crew just a few weeks ago. And now they've got a lot of their guys healthy and back, especially on that defensive line.
Real quick, how are both of our squads doing in the Olympics, soccer-wise?
The women are doing great. They seem to be like a totally rejuvenated team under a new head coach in Emma Hayes. That's great to see. They've also just got like a refreshed, essential core of players that are playing for them, like new captains, they seem refreshed in a really good way, a really positive way. Trinity Rodman, daughter of Dennis Rodman, is one of the leading scorers for that team. So great to see all them doing well. The men got knocked out yesterday to Morocco, which is they're a very good team and have some world-class players on that side. But still, they got absolutely destroyed 4-0, and disappointing to see them go out like that. Having said that, most Olympic success probably they've ever had, if at least the most they've had in at least 20 years. So at least you got that, and it's a, basically a youth squad. So we'll see how many of these players from that squad actually kind of graduate and move into the senior team where they can really make an impact in some of the bigger competitions like the World Cup and Copa America in the years to come.
All right, Joe, I will see you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on Monday morning, my friend.
Yes, sir. We're back.
All right. We'll talk to you then. Our buddy Joe Patrick there on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.